And we're talking with Raymond Hurd tonight about the impact that the entertainment industry and the media has. And Ray, you were saying that the violence in films, the violence in television, the promotion of the
gratuitous violence, and in video games. I mean, we don't know who did this yet, but apparently he was dressed in one of those long coats and garbed like you see people dressed in these goth-type movies, TV shows, and especially video games. So I think experts, I'm not an expert, but experts say that imitation is a big problem. And we've just had this really sick case, which we forget, of a guy who was a pedophile teacher in Thailand claiming to have murdered a little girl and
John Mark
didn't
Carr.
Do it. So we live in very bizarre times, but, and in my judgment, the media is to blame for exploiting and profiting by doing much of the stuff that they're doing.
Okay, on that point of media, you know, there's two ends of this. I mean, there's violence in Hollywood, but and it, that probably has an effect somewhere along the line. But how much of it is overkill by straight news organizations that you've run? When you've got a situation like this that happens, and you just brought up the John Mark Carr thing, psychologists that have looked at Carr said he almost wanted to lead a double life in retroactively, yeah. That he wanted to insinuate himself. When you had the JonBenet Ramsey case as the number one item on Larry King night after night after night, how much is overkill on a story like this? We've got it from
I
the psychological
think
angle.
Overkill on the part of the media, Beryl, because especially with all news networks, CNN and Fox, News World, Newsnet in Canada, Cable Pulse here, they need to fill airtime. Nancy Grace especially needs to do this. You see her on CNN. So when something like this happens, we heard here today that four people had been shot dead in Montreal. I don't know what the body count is now.
Two, the suspect and one young woman, and they're 19 injured.
So, you know, we heard four, and then it changes. They jumped to judgment. One of the reasons for this is technological. With satellites and the sort of video cameras you have now, you can go live. When I was at Global and when I was in Vietnam, everything got shot on film. It had to be edited. There was time to think about what you're doing.
But now
they put it on the
right.
air, and once they put it on the air, and they're often wrong, then they start thinking about it.
But
every major story, you will watch this. They retract after a few hours.
They do, but Ray Hurd, and this is very important, you mentioned Vietnam, and I want to get back to this after this short break we've got to take, how the major stories in the world get wiped right off over events like this, and I'll give you a seminal case of this right after this break and get your opinion on it. Montreal, I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Montreal, this is Beryl Wiseman, and we're back with continuing 940 coverage of the day's events in Montreal, the tragic shootings at Dawson College. We want to hear from you. If you know anybody who's there, if you were there yourself, if you're a witness to what was going on, 790-0006. We're looking at all angles of this story, both what happened today and what we can expect in the days to come and what we should avoid in the days to come. And right now we're talking to Ray Hurd, former editor of the Montreal Star and former president of CanWest News. And Ray, you were talking just before the break about the entertainment media controlling itself in terms of gratuitous violence, but then we went to the news media, and I wanted to ask you something. You know, just during the Middle East war, when the John Mark Carr episode arose and that you brought up, all of a sudden every major network, it's as if the war stopped. It's as if, you know, wag the dog. They ended the war, and it was John Mark Carr. Now then psychologists got on. They said Carr wanted to sublimate his life into the Ramsey tragedy.
Yeah,
is there overkill on the part of news media that gets sickos out there wanting to copy and identify and be copycat killers simply because we collect stories from every possible angle more than just straight news?
I think you got to understand the need for fill. And also, it sounds cruel to say it, but I will. If you run a story day after day after day, like Lebanon, people start getting tired. So the news editors see something new happening. I think this shooting in Montreal, if two people have been killed, is a tragedy, but I'm not sure that it's going to merit the massive attention it's going to get. People are tired of the liberal leadership race story, which is going nowhere.
I don't even think they're awake to
it. They are, frankly, they've had so much about Afghanistan. One of the reasons there is that in World War II, you know, when I grew up, people got killed, but they never had a state funeral for everyone who got killed. We do that on TV now, and I think the families have every reason to be gratified. So we live in an age of overkill, and the media knows in its instinct that people can't follow the same story for too long. So if they get a chance to switch, they switch. So in a perverse way, the alleged killer of the Ramsey girl, this Montreal tragedy, are giving the media a chance to get onto new ground. And on ground
that is relatively simple for people to understand. Yeah. Yet very interestingly, there was a caller on one of the stations today said, hey, you know, guys, why don't you just cool it a little bit? I'm trying to reach my daughter. She goes to that school. And all I'm hearing on every station is this overkill and just cool it. You know,
guess what?
Here's a parent who wanted less rather than more.
But guess what the reason is? Media has to make profit to survive. It's a business. It's tragic that it is, but it is. When I was younger in the 60s, there was a more idealistic attitude towards journalism. Today, sadly, journalism has become just another business.
But Ed Murrow warned about that in his 1958 speech, that the media, radio, television, had to be more than just diversion and entertainment.
Yeah. Well, it has a duty to inform and instruct, but also it has a duty to entertain. It's not entertaining with disaster, but it does mix the recipe up a bit. And the guys who run these network news operations and the local stations know that if there's a shooting in your own hometown, it's much more chilling and dramatic than what happens 6,000 miles away.
And you have the Nancy Graces of the world, as you mentioned, who frankly trivialize tragedy.
Yeah, well, she seems to me, I'm not an expert on Nancy Grace, but it seems to me that she jumps to judgment. She finds people guilty long before the courts do. And if the courts find them innocent, she'll still find them guilty. But again, why are they doing this? They're doing it to drive up ratings so they can charge advertisers higher fees to get on their air. It's almost that simple. And the only solution is for the public to be more discriminating. If the public don't like overkill, as I call it, and that's the most unfortunate term to use, but I'm using it deliberately, the public switch off or don't buy the newspaper, and the message will be received by the bean counters who look at the numbers every day. And if the numbers are down and you're not selling and you don't have TV ratings, they'll change the way they operate. So in a perverse way, again, blame the public for apparently demanding what they're getting. Because if they weren't listening and watching, it wouldn't be so trite and so commercial and so sensationalistic.
Ray Hurd, we thank you very much for your insights tonight.
Thank you very much. It's good being back in spirit with my friends in Montreal.
Good to have you.
Okay.
Montreal, we'll be back after this. Good evening again, Montreal. It's Beryl Wiseman here. We're continuing with 940's coverage of the day's tragic events in Montreal. We want to hear from you, 790-0006. If you were there, if you witnessed it, if you know somebody who was there, if you just want to get something off your chest about this kind of a tragedy. Right now, we're going to Samantha. Good evening, Samantha. Welcome.
Good evening. I've been listening to your show since pretty much everything broke out this afternoon. I have to say you guys are doing a very, very good job of covering the story.
It's a great team here.
I was just listening to Mr. Hurd, and he's blaming society and the news and the parents. And I find he's blaming everybody but the individual himself who committed this heinous act today.
Samantha, to be fair to him, the question that was put to him at the very beginning was, after every tragedy like this, there's always a wave of calls for legislation and regulation. And my question to him was, is that really necessary, or do we just have to be mature and accept the fact that bad things will happen to good people without stifling even more the rights of the law-abiding mass majority? And his response was, no, we don't need the rule and regulation, law and legislation. But then he said, but here's where the problem is. Of course, I think it was implicit in what he was saying, that he blamed this gunman. But he said, if there's one thing that we can do as a society without legislation, it's to look at the entertainment and media and news industries and have them be a little more reflective on how they portray certain things like gratuitous violence. He wasn't saying that this kid wasn't responsible, but he was saying that there are images that we can cut down on that perhaps can reduce the number of incidents like this and the Columbines and everything else. I don't think Ray Hurd, and knowing Ray Hurd, he certainly wouldn't go easy on characters like this.
Yeah, no, which is true, and I do agree to a degree, yes. The, you know, the film society, even especially in music, there is a lot of violence which can severely be toned down. But I feel that people also need to realize, like he was talking about, you know, like parents, you know, they need to teach their kids better. But sometimes it's not just the way the parents are teaching the kids. The parents could be, you know, the greatest people in the world and teach their kids the best values. But, you know, the children will still go out there and learn from their friends who might, you know, whose parents might, you know, not be instilling the best values in them.
Yes,
I can't be just blamed on the individual's, you know, parents or
yes, he will, but just to give you a little background as to why he made that parental comment when we were off air, we were talking, and we were talking about the British experience, and Ray spent a lot of time in Britain, and you may or may not know that there are some crazy things going on in Britain in terms of parenting. They're passing a law in Britain to establish a national parenting academy. Now listen to what this does. If you've got kids who've been in trouble twice, you have to go as parents to the National Parenting Academy. You've got to take this course, right?
Okay.
If you come back from the course, and if your kids get into trouble a third time, the state has a right to take away the kid. So I know that what Ray had in his mind was, we got to stop short of going the British experience where they're legislating parenting. Because this National Parenting Academy is really Big Brother to an insane extreme.
Yeah, no, it is an insane extreme, because, I mean, most, like, you know, in my opinion, now hearing this, I mean, for parents to have to go through that, I mean, it makes them feel horrible, as well as knowing that, you know, there's a chance their children could be taken away when maybe necessarily they haven't done anything for their
right.
children to behave the way they do.
And frankly, as you said, you know, and looking at the statistics, by the way, on characters like this fellow, if it turns out to be, you know, a crime unrelated to race or anything else, right? These kids don't necessarily come from underprivileged homes. There's no root causes. They just are sickos, and with the best intentions, and they come sometimes from middle class and even upper middle class and upper class backgrounds, and they just go bad.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the point that I did want to get across, and thank you for, you know, highlighting that. I also want to say, he did say there have been a lot of rumors that, you know, the shooter was possibly a Gothic person. But, you know, people should know that's not confirmed, that a lot of people might be, you know, listening and all the kids.
No, it's not confirmed by far, no.
Yeah, exactly. It's not confirmed at all. And for all we know, you know, which a lot of people who don't take the time to listen to the facts should know, that for all we know, this person could have liked rap music. He could have been, like you said, you know, could have come from an upper class family. It might not have been Gothic. But
oh, there's a lot of Goths. Samantha, there's a lot of Goths. You know, on St. Lawrence, there's a lot of Goths from upper class homes. It's not a lower class phenomenon.
Yeah, like I had a lot of friends who are Gothic that are great people, and for all we know, the guy could have not been Gothic at all, but for some reason could have had a problem with them and changed his look to look like one and try and put more pressure on them, like what happened in Columbine.
You know, the funny thing is, in talking to security authorities, police authorities this afternoon, there were so many rumors flying around that. One witness said that he looked like a Goth because he had spiked hair that stuck out of his mask or his hood, and another said he had long stringy hair. So there, you know,
yeah,
and
some
these people were.
He had a mohawk. He had the long leather boots.
There was one who said
right.
There was one who said he had a mohawk haircut, and there was another one who said he had long stringy hair, and they were both supposedly looking the same person. So
yeah,
a lot
exactly.
of things have to get unraveled before we really get to the bottom of this.
Because as was said earlier on in the show, it goes down the rumor mill, and stories do, they tend to change, or they're not interpreted the same way by each individual.
Samantha, thanks very, very much.
Thank you for having me on the air.
Take care. Montreal will be right back after this. Montreal, Beryl Wiseman here with continuing 940 coverage of the day's events, the tragic shootings at Dawson College. We want to hear from you. Call us at 514-790-0006. If you want to get something off your chest, if you just want to talk, if you had a child of yours who goes to Dawson, if you witnessed anything, if you're a teacher, we want to hear from you. We want to see this from all angles. Steve, welcome. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I listen to you a lot, Beryl.
Steve, can you talk closer to your to the phone?
Yeah, sorry. You know, I listen to you like almost every night, and I get the distinct impression that you're more upset about the fact that you can't continue on your normal topics of warmongering against Iran and that this tragedy is cut into your usual time.
Well,
am I wrong about that?
No, actually not, but you're right about one thing. I think there's a limit when a tragedy like this happens between straight news coverage and all the analysis that follows. So let me explain what I mean by that. You know, you can only cover war issues for so long, and last night we covered a number of issues that have had nothing to do with the Middle East, including income trusts and the inequitable tax situation in Canada. What concerns me whenever a tragedy like this happens is all the sociological and psychological stuff that comes after that inevitably results in a period of time, however short, with people calling for breaks on our movement and our actions and more security and more regulation. That kind of stuff bothers me, and it worries me that we as a society can't be mature enough to accept that bad things will happen to good people. So it's not the straight news coverage that has me concerned, but it's the possible after effects of legislation that controls behavior.
Yeah, but Beryl, you know.
Again, just a little closer to your phone.
Yeah, as a public radio station,
right,
that has a responsibility to Montreal, you have to realize when a giant event like this happens that it's normal to spend a couple days. I mean, we spent a good month on the war between Israel and Hezbollah, and it didn't directly affect us.
Steve, feeling
you're resentful hour tonight.
Steve, no, I'm concerned about the following. When story after story, and forget about just 940, but all media today are covering this event, as all media were covering the Mideast war. You looked at CNN, you looked at Fox, it didn't matter which news channel, you had the war coverage every day because it was a war that could have led to a global war, and it affected us in direct and indirect ways through people who have relatives over there, through the price of oil, you name it. But what was being examined was hard news stories coming out. The angle that I'm examining, and with all due respect to everybody's sensibilities, but the angle that I'm examining is, when do we cross the line on a story like this, and whether it's the Montreal shooting or whether it's Columbine, or whether, frankly, it's the Toronto 17, from discussing the events and the news to going into the sociological and psychological analysis where everybody becomes a talking head expert, and we have this resulting call for mindless law and legislation that's somehow going to protect little Johnny. Well, things can't protect all of us all the time. And that's my only concern in an overflow, and that's what I was talking with Ray Hurd about, in an overflow of sentimentality. Hard news, yes, we've got to get the facts. But this is not, as tragic as this is, and as much of a sicko as this kid was or this young person was who came in with a gun, it's not a defining issue that somehow our society is corrupted. That's the only line in the sand that I want to draw.
Yeah, well, Beryl,
Steve, I'm sorry, I got to go to a break because they're really tying us to the clock. Thanks for your call. Montreal, I'll be right back. Beryl Wiseman back with you. We're continuing 940's coverage of the tragic shootings at Dawson College, and we're pleased to be joined by Lauren Gunther, National Post columnist. Lauren, thanks for taking the time tonight. I wanted very much to speak to you. You were on with us the other day talking about civil liberties. Our lines have been backed up, and a few people have been disconcerted by the fact that I'm not more empathetic and that I'm bringing up the issue that there is a line that we have to draw between covering the story seriously as hard news and going over the edge into sociology and psychology that inevitably leads to calls for more rule and regulation and law and legislation. I can't find that false piety in myself. Am I wrong?
No. No, you're not at all. The tendency here is when something like this rattles our middle-class sensibilities, and it does, because, you know, everybody knows somebody who's at school or is at school themselves or have kids at school, and when a gunman walks in, Columbine or Dunblane or Ecole Polytechnique and now Dawson, you know, it ruins the impression we have of how our kids should be safe and that school should be happy places where kids learn and they're not attacked by madmen with guns. So when that happens, it so rattles our world that it's a natural impulse to say something must be done. And I think there are probably no more dangerous words
than something must be done.
Than something must be done, because people will then grab on to the first something that a demagogue will suggest. And it's not always the rational thing. It's not even always something that will work. And I mean, I hate to go back to gun legislation in Canada, but there are reports, and as you were saying earlier in the show, it's not clear yet just what has happened at Dawson and who this fellow was and what he did or why, you know, what spurred him to do this. It's also not clear what he was using in this attack.
Actually, there is quite a detailed description of this by an eyewitness student that this was an assault rifle, semi-automatic, with the kind that went under your armpit. So that he gave a pretty detailed description.
But there are also eyewitnesses who said there were four gunmen. So
that's correct.
Until the police come out and say, here is what he had. I've seen reports on the wire that say he had a handgun. Some he said an assault rifle. Some said it was an AK-47. Whatever it was, it's very likely it was a large capacity automatic or semi-automatic weapon.
Right.
All of which would have been illegal for him to have under existing gun laws. And so despite the fact that we've had some of the strictest gun laws in the world in Canada for the last 10 years...
Many people aren't aware that we've had a long gun registry for a long time.
Well, and we've had handgun registration
since
1934. So, you know, you haven't been able to possess legally a fully automatic gun in Canada since 1977 or a handgun without it being registered since 1934. More gun laws will not stop this. This is not the fault of ease of access to legal firearms. It may be the fault of ease of access to illegal firearms, but that's an entirely different process. It doesn't require us to tell every duck hunter in northern Ontario or in the Gaspé to let us know what kinds of rifles he has. These are problems that are not going to be dealt with simply by passing more quick-fix laws like that. And you know, it's about 200 years ago, James Madison, who was one of the founding fathers in the United States, said that in order to ensure their freedom, people must resist the impulse to use each new emergency as an excuse for passing more laws.
Right.
And that was true 200 years ago. It's just as true now.
And he also wrote, I believe, in the Federalist Papers, there have been more instances of the abridgment of the people's sovereignty by small incursions into their liberties than by any large assault. And this is the other dangerous effect that can happen. When politicians and public officials want to respond, they want to either feel compelled to respond just out of humanity or out of political considerations, and they start responding by putting more and more security in public buildings to the point where just normal living is affected.
Yes, well, and you know,
with no greater security.
Perfect example of how timid politicians are in the face of crises like this one at Dawson College today. The Dunblane shootings in Scotland, where a crazed individual with automatic weapons walked into a school and killed 17. There was a judicial inquiry into that, and the inquiry authors said, you know, there's a natural tendency to want to limit access to guns when this happens, but there's already a lot of checks against insane people getting guns, and there are just certain things that are going to happen that are bad and more
laws. Lorne, I just have to interrupt because we want to go to a live press conference. Premier Jean Charest has just started. Please stay with us when we come back to you right after the press conference. Montreal's Beryl Wiseman continuing 940's coverage of today's tragic events, Dawson College. And we're looking at this from some different angles tonight. We want to hear from you. If you know anybody who was there, if you're a teacher there, if you're a student, a parent with kids there, 514-790-0006. Lauren Gunther from Edmonton, thanks very much for being patient with us. Lauren Gunther of the National Post. We didn't expect that press conference of the premier, but I know you're on a tight schedule. I just want to throw one question by you. And we thank CTV Newsnet for that live feed of the press conference. This is what we were talking about before the break. I don't think it's unempathetic. In fact, quite the contrary. If political leadership at a moment of crisis like this does not resort to some of the words that we typically hear and heard again in this press conference. We had a reporter ask the premier, we've had three shootings in Montreal over the past 12 years. Does that say something about our society, about education? And the premier said, well, we may need some reflection, and the Minister of Education will start considering certain aspects. Now, whenever I hear a politician talk about reflection on an issue that really, rationally, has no solution, it worries me that they're going to put some new baggage on a society instead of having the courage to stand up as a leader and say to people, there aren't solutions to every problem. Am I being too cold on this?
No, but it is in defense of politicians, which I don't do very often. It isn't today the day to say that. I mean, today's a day of grief and shock and all that other sort of thing. We want to get all the facts down first. And then I think 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, even days from now, a politician can say not everything can be solved. We have to be vigilant. We have to be aware that bad things are going to happen to good people, and so we'll keep our eyes open. But, you know, passing all the laws in the world or setting up new expensive programs or giving out extra grants isn't always the answer. So there isn't something that can be done. But today is not a day when people want to hear that.
They don't want to hear that, but you know what? Perhaps I remember that Bobby Kennedy used to say, and said in a moment of great tragedy, the night of the assassination of Martin Luther King, that was an event of violence that was truly consequential in terms of where society stood. And he went into the ghetto in Indianapolis without security, and he stood on that flatbed truck, and all he said to the gathered thousands was that a great man had been killed today. And he quoted one line of poetry, that there is no solutions, but pain which falls drop by drop upon the heart until through the awful grace of God we attain wisdom is all we can hope for. And he quoted that line from the poet Aeschylus time and time again. And perhaps the pathos of the Greek poets is something we all need to learn.
You know, I get branded as callous as often as you do, I think. But I think talking too much today about the lack of solutions is kind of like going to a friend's funeral and saying, you know, he really was a jerk.
Lauren Gunther, thanks very much for being patient with us and taking the time.
Not at all.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Danielle, welcome. Danielle?
Yes?
Good evening.
Good evening. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes. Okay, I'm just calling because I just want to say, and this is on behalf of a lot of students at Dawson.
Right. You go to Dawson?
Yes, I do.
Were you there today?
Yes, I was.
Did you witness what was going on?
Yes, I did. I actually saw the gunman running towards the atrium where he was hiding behind a vending machine to try and, I guess, shoot students.
What did you think when you first saw him? Did you see him with the gun?
Yeah, no. My first gut reaction was that this is a joke. It's like, because if you're a Dawson student, you know that Dawson's a type of school where everyone, there's no, like, for example, quote, losers, there's no popular girls, there's no cliques in the way that there's people that hate on other people.
Right.
And my first thing was, this has to be a joke. And
describe what he looked like. How was he dressed? Was his face covered?
You know what? I remember his blonde hair and it, not a mohawk, a faux hawk, which is pretty much the, like a new trend of mohawks that people are doing to their hair.
Right.
And he was wearing a trench coat. And I remember calling my friend.
And
Tyler,
no mask?
Said,
no mask?
At the first, his eyes were covered, but I saw the side of his face, and people go, you know what, I don't think he was in a trench coat, this and that, and I said, listen, he was in a trench coat, and then later on they confirmed that he actually was.
What color?
Now, so it was black. There was two.
So you're saying he had a mask around his eyes?
Yes. No, not around the eyes, around the face.
With the eyes open?
Yes.
So it was like, was it like a pull-down ski mask kind of thing?
You know what, I don't.
Hello, Danielle? Danielle? Sorry, we seem to have lost Danielle, unfortunately. We are going to go to a break right now, and then we'll be right back. And I'm Beryl Wiseman, back with you, continuing 940's coverage of the day's tragic events, the aftermath of the shootings at Dawson College. We want to hear from you. If you have something to get off your chest, if you just want to talk, if you are a student there, if you are a parent, if you're a teacher, 514-790-0006. And we're very glad to have gotten Danielle back. Danielle, hi.
Hi.
Now, you go to Dawson, you were a witness, and before we lost you, we were talking about how you saw this guy, and he was dressed in a black trench coat, and you were talking about his mask, that you could see his blonde faux hawk haircut, and you could see his eyes, but so what was it, sort of a mask that was pulled up over the bottom part of his face?
Or? You know what? It happened very fast, and the way it happened is that I was in a classroom, and usually the doors of a classroom are closed, but this classroom door was open. And I looked to the right, and a lot of people, I heard yelling, and I heard a little, like, gunshots, but I mean, I wouldn't have thought they were gunshots.
Right.
And I look, and he walked by.
How far away from you?
I was probably about 10 feet away from the door.
Right.
And my first instinct was, why, if it was someone like that, why wasn't he going into classes? So what I did was the teacher had notified us, go under the desk. We ran under the desks. And then about a minute later, he just let us out, and we ran out through the Sherbrooke main entrance.
Right.
Which is where, for Dawson students who go there, know that it's near the library.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking, and people were trying, they were locking themselves into classrooms so that people wouldn't come in. So we ran out. The police were there immediately. They told us to put our hands on our heads just because they wanted to make sure that none of us were either suspects or none of us had
right.
anything on us. And me calling today is just to tell you that I've spoken to a lot of students today. I mean, we've been back and forth on the phone. A lot of what the media is portraying that happened today is kind of either overrating it or underrating it in the way that they're saying that there's only one shooter, when a lot of students have seen many, many of like, for example, more than
yeah,
one.
Yeah, there were reports of the day of two, three, and even perhaps four.
Exactly. And I mean, there's...
And there were even reports that policemen were chasing somebody away from Dawson down toward Alexis Neon Plaza. Did you or your friends see any of that?
You know, I heard stories where my friend, she was in the gym, and she's coming out of the gym because she's ready to leave school, and there was two officers pointing rifles right at her head that weren't dressed in the uniform.
Right.
But they had the SWAT, the bulletproof vest. Now, a lot of this is a lot of, like, she said, he said, but I just want to say that a lot of what's being said on the news doesn't, it's not adding up.
In terms of the events, this was just one shooter.
You know what?
In terms of where the students who were injured were,
yes.
Could it have been one shooter?
No,
in terms
absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Listen, you know, Dawson is a big school, but it's when you're a student there, you know that it's pretty much like it becomes home in the way that it's not so big for you anymore.
So one student who explained the way the shooter was going at it, at his attacks, was kind of describing the atrium as a shooting gallery, but could that have resulted in all 20 students who were injured being hurt just in that area, or were there students hurt elsewhere?
Okay, now, for, I have a student that slipped in a pool of blood that happened to be on the fourth floor. I have a friend that told me that she was running and she looked and all of a sudden she sees a body on the ground. I have another friend that was actually in the atrium where it happened, and she says that the gunman came in, hid behind a vending machine, and then right away started pointing, and she, as she was talking to her friend, he shot her in the leg.
And these three areas were how far apart? The three areas that you just described.
About a minute away from each other.
So this guy would have had to be what?
He would have had to been in the atrium, in the third floor at the end near the exit on Sherbrooke, and in front of the dimension of doors.
Within the same minute.
Exactly. So it doesn't, anyone you speak to that goes to Dawson will tell you there's no way that there was only one shooter, especially in the layout it happened. I mean, I have a friend that he shot her right in the leg, and then supposedly there was another gunman shooting towards other people, and that one gunman went and committed suicide, and then another gunman got neutralized. Now, there's so much talk about where the gunman, how many gunmen, but
right.
You know what? I think when I came out, a police officer asked me, how are you doing, Danielle? And I said, you know what? I'm fine. Go ahead inside and take care of the people that are getting shot at.
Well, Danielle, you're very eloquent and you're very, very careful in your descriptions, and you seem to have gotten the whole geography of the situation down right.
Yeah.
Did you tell all this to the police who were there?
You know what? There's so many people that have been questioned by the police.
Right.
My first goal, to be quite honest, was to get
the hell out
of the downtown area.
Right.
I don't have a cell phone.
Right.
I was caught. My friends were in a panic calling my mother. My mother hadn't known. She only found out because my friends called her and said, turn on the television. So I got on the phone with my friend, and she was panicking, going, are you okay, this and that? And she's like, where are you? And I go, I'm at a phone booth. And she goes, be careful. The gunman is still running around. So my first instinct, I dropped the phone. I ran. I got to a cell phone. I called my father, and he came and picked me up right before they closed off all of downtown.
Danielle, we thank you very much for your call. If you want to stay with us, we've just got to take a quick news break.
All right.
And then we'll be right back. Montreal, we'll be back right after this. Montreal, this is Beryl Wiseman with you, continuing 940's coverage of the shootings at Dawson College, the aftermath of them. We want to hear from you. If you want to just talk, get something off your chest. If you're a parent, a student, a teacher, 514-790-0006. Tell us what you saw. Tell us what you felt. Tell us what you're bothered by. Adam, welcome.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. First time caller.
Pleasure.
A couple of things I want to get off my chest. First things first, very, very interesting description of the events by Danielle, your previous caller.
Right.
Because ironically, today, my sister was downtown at the corner of St. Catherine and Peel, and she bumped into, as she was walking, she walked by someone who fit the description of one of the other shooters that they were announcing when the news first broke.
Right.
You know, tall guy, trench coat, the boots, right up to a little bit lower than the kneecaps, and she actually called the police, informed them, and right after they called her right back asking for more information, which indicates to us that maybe they knew this guy was out and that he did leave the premises. So this is all speculation, but it was very interesting to have that account from Danielle. So
it was, and I can tell you that my office is on Peel, and at around the time of the shooting, or shortly thereafter, we had seen it on television. We were following in the offices, and as I went outside, there was a lot of police traffic, ambulance traffic, and some stationary police cruisers on Peel from St. Catherine all the way to Sherbrooke.
Well, that's exactly why, because we had placed that phone call to alert them that description, because according to her, the size of her trench coat, the size of that man's trench coat was too big for him. And her gut feeling, gut instinct, because she's never wrong about it, she says, Adam, there's just something under there. I knew there was something under there. I knew the way he was walking, the way he was looking around. So she made that call. So could it be speculation? Maybe. Is it a weird coincidence? Possibly. But we'll see with time, as time goes by. I just wanted to make one more point. I don't
sure.
want to take up too much time.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. It's the airways are yours.
A couple of things. Danielle, I have to correct Danielle on a couple of things. Danielle, when she talks about the fact that there's no cliques at Dawson and that everybody is kind of okay with everybody, she's absolutely mistaken. These types of situations do not do not surprise me because of the sheer alienation that these people feel. I see this all the time.
Adam, now this is important. When you say these people, what kind of people?
The people I'm talking about is this. Now, you got to be careful. This is not an insult.
Right.
I'm telling you how we see it and how the students, you know, label them.
Right.
So you have the guy who either has the Mohawk haircut, he's got the dark dyed black hair, he's got the piercings, he's got the tattoos, he's got the army boots.
What Ray Heard earlier this evening would have called a goth.
A goth, exactly. A gothic look. You got the Pantera shirt, loves Korn, loves Nine Inch Nails, always very secluded, very quiet, Marilyn, you know, listens to Marilyn Manson. These might be cliche, and
right.
People might look at it as cliche, but this is always happening, and we see these guys. That sometimes, it's happened to me on many occasions, especially with the gothic looking guys, that you tap them the wrong way, and you bump into them in the wrong way, and these guys have turned around and given me looks of pure rage through their eyes, and they're very quiet people.
Are you talking about a lot of the student population?
No, I'm not talking, because they represent such a small, minute percentage.
Right.
But they equate for a big presence, is what I'm trying to explain to you, because you can't miss them. When they're sitting there and they're quiet, and, you know, they might be drumming into thin air, you know, it's as if they're drumming to the music they have in their Walkmans. A lot of them always have Walkman on.
And can you just stay with us, because we have to take a short break?
Absolutely.
Right after the break.
No problem.
Beryl Wiseman back with you, continuing 940's coverage of the shootings at Dawson College and their aftermath. If you're a student, if you're a teacher, if you've got something to get off your chest, we want to hear from you. 514-790-0006. And we've been talking to a number of remarkably eloquent and remarkably strong Dawson College students who witnessed a lot of things today and got their heads together better than a lot of people who weren't there, and we're talking to one of those eloquent and courageous young people right now. Adam, your sisters, you were telling me, saw one of the guys walking, and I meant to ask you a question, and then you can get back to your point you were making. I meant to ask you, what did he look like?
Well,
this fellow.
According to my sister, the look was a typical gothic look. The boots were standing out, the big trench coat, which was an oversized trench coat.
Right.
And according to her, what set off the alarm was obviously because of how big the trench coat was and obviously the size of this guy. And for sure, according to what she said, that she says there had to have been something under there. And her gut feeling forced her to make the phone call. She then secluded herself in one of the stores on St. Catherine. She doesn't want to take any chances. And then they called her back. And this is what's striking me, because Danielle just mentioned about how she believes there might have been more shooters.
Right.
If the shooter had been brought down to say the way that they claimed he was, then they wouldn't have called back my sister asking or inquiring for more information on what she had seen.
Sure.
This is my gut instinct. But the reason why I called, which I just want to sum it up real quick.
Right.
The reason why I called is because you're going to hear a lot of phone calls here on people saying, you know, you can't tell on these signs. These people don't give away signs. They just snap. And I disagree with that. You have no idea what kind of torment these guys go through and what these girls go through in high school and in CJEP and in the collegiate level. They are picked on all the time. They are laughed at. They are said, you know, look at that guy over there. He looks like he's straight out of Columbine. You have guys who turn around and say, you know, just things that would just... It would just set anybody off. So what I'm saying is, it's so ironic, because I had an argument with my buddy about 3 weeks ago, and I said, you got to watch what you say to people, Louis. You got to be careful, because you don't know what these guys are going through.
Okay, but Adam, let me ask you something. You're going through higher education, and that involves more than just getting a degree in accounting or computers, something to make a living. You're becoming a civilized member of society in every aspect. That means you're a person of philosophy, of history, of art, of refinement. Is it not appropriate, of course, not to put these people down in a crude way, but would it not have been appropriate, as you said, what these people went through high school, would it not have been appropriate to get these people more in line, perhaps to impose dress codes, to have a certain standard of civility for students? It means something special to be a student in society, does it not?
Yes, but it's not. Look, we're mistaking ourselves here, because it's got nothing with the way of. It's got nothing to do with the way of dressing. It's got nothing to do with their code of dress. as a school is concerned, this is a match of many things. This is a way of life. This is their attitude. This is the secluded atmosphere that they're in. This is a very, very, very big-time introverted people that we see that we don't socialize with. The best thing we could do, rather than implement the dress codes, is to socialize with these people. Talk to them. Approach them like they're everybody else. Don't seclude them, because I had this argument.
Do you?
I had this argument.
But Adam, do you?
Yeah. Well, of course I do.
Yeah.
But I have to keep my distance. I have to make sure that I'm not stepping on anybody's feet.
No, but when you approach them, when you want to treat them like normal people, as you would say, do they respond normally, or do they say like?
Yes, but they're surprised. I see it all the time. They don't understand why I'm talking to them. They see a guy, you know, clean cut guy, a motivated guy, a good speaker. They say, you know, why is this guy talking to me? And I say, I'm like everybody else now. Let's work on this project together, or let's do this together, because everybody's had one of these guys or girls in their classes. But they choose the easy way out. They choose to seclude these people, and then all of a sudden, when these things happen, then they ask themselves, how could it possibly happen?
Adam, let me ask you one final question, because our lines are really backed up.
Okay.
But I want to get back to something Ray Hurd had touched on earlier in the show. These kids that take on this goth affect and this goth subculture, any economic class divisions, or they come across the spectrum?
No, they come across the spectrum. You have people, ironically, a lot of them that I've met are from upper middle class, which is ironic, but it's like that.
Well, not really. It's probably a form of rebellion.
Well, that's it. It's rebellion number one. It's also neglect on the parent, as far as the parents are concerned. Either they're both working full-time career jobs, and they've got no set of rules in the house that implement some kind of, you know, attitude and rules inside the house. The point is that when you're looking at these types of people and you see this type of stuff going on, to me, it doesn't surprise me because of the treatment these people get. And we have to wake up and we have to realize that Montreal is not any different than any other city. We have to learn how to be vigilant. We have to learn how to pick up these signs. And please, Montreal, together, we got to approach these people. We have to work together to get this word out and also pick up on these signs and say, that guy looks tired. He looks upset. He looks distressed.
Right.
He's sitting in the corner. He's not talking to anybody. Why? Sir, why is this guy sitting like this? You might want to talk to him. And I've said that
good
on multiple
point.
Occasions. So anyways, I don't want to talk for too long. Thank you for taking
Adam,
my call.
Thank you for your eloquence, and thank you for your insights.
Thank you. All the best.
Take care. Good night. Bye. Francis, good evening.
How are you?
Okay.
Actually, it's a couple things. First, to respond to the other caller, I mean, I've gone through CJEP recently. I'm in university right now.
Right.
And I've had actually three friends that are what you would call goth. None of them have portrayed signs of being introverted or anything like that. Actually, most of them are very social. I'm actually if you want to call it, a Gino WAP. Right? I hung out with all the Italians, and yet I still had friends that were gothic. And these guys were totally out there. They were had fun. They liked to dress like
Francis, that. Let me ask you, this gothic, the gothic subcultures, the first thing you see is the hair? Is that like a major thing? Because we've heard a lot of talk in the descriptions of these guys today, particularly the description of the killer who himself was killed. A lot of concentration on the hair. Is this a big identification symbol?
No, because as the people I've known that are goths, most of them have longer hair.
Right.
Very few of them have mohawks or faux-hawks or any of that stuff.
Francis, can you stay with us? We just got to take a short break. Can you stay with us?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Montreal will be right back. Montreal, we're back. I'm Beryl Wiseman, President of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal, and there's no last angry man tonight. We're continuing 940 coverage of the Dawson College shootings and their aftermath. We want to hear from you. If you have something to get off your chest, if you're a student, if you're a teacher, 514-790-0006. We're continuing talking to Francis.
Yes, sir.
So this goth subculture, that you know them, and you're taking issue a little bit with some things that Adam had to say.
It's not an issue. It's just the fact that people think that they're always secluded. They just want to be alone. In reality, it's not true. It's more us that secludes them than them secluding themselves. It honestly depends on the person. Some of them, I do have to admit, are introverted. I've gone out actually clubbing with some of them to goth clubs, and some of them will just hang out in the corner and not do anything. Other ones will actually converse, be social and everything. I mean, it's just like any other clique. They will either, you know, socialize with everybody or just not socialize with anybody at all.
Francis, I think there's been an implication from callers, from guests tonight, that part of the underpinning of goth culture is a subculture of violence, that somehow that makes up part of the characterization, that it's not enough simply to say, oh, they're alienated. Well, a lot of people are alienated, but the suggestion has been made tonight that violence, some kind of manifestation of violence, makes it easier in that subculture to go that crazy step further.
It honestly depends, because this goth subculture actually has subcultures of its own. Each one is separated into different ideas, different ways of thinking. Just like any other type of subculture is separated into different ways of thinking. I mean, you have, just in my group of friends, right, we're all a bunch of Italians. Some of us that waste all their time going clubbing and wasting all the money. They work, they go out. They work, they go out. Other ones of us that are actually studying, you know, it really depends on each one and what we think. We all listen to different types of music. We all watch different types of movies. It all goes the same way. It has nothing to do with the goth culture in general that is one thing. It's all towards violence. They don't all go after that. I mean, yes, it is a major part of most goth subcultures, but not all of them.
Got it.
And,
thanks, Francis.
You have to make the differentiation between them all.
Thank you very much. We're just going to get to some calls because the lines are really burning up. Thanks a lot, Francis. Andy, thank you for holding.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
Three short things. First of all, Adam, Danielle, and Francis, they are much better than the reporters who were talking on radio.
Impressive young people, no?
No, I mean, Danielle was precise, and you tried to ask questions to make sure that was she completely convinced about it, and you couldn't get her off track.
Right, right, exactly. That's exactly why I was asking the questions, and she was dead on. She knew what she was saying.
She didn't waver.
No.
Now, the reporters, the kind of question they were asking the premier, are they educated people?
It made me crazy, too. I mean,
please, those kind of questions, you know already the answer. The guy can't...
They were asking questions for the sake of asking questions.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have anything positive or anything realistic to ask.
No, it was just churn 'em and burn 'em.
Yeah.
You know, man-bites-dog journalism.
Yeah. Now, the third thing, we have a gun law which is quite strict in a sense. Now, and still, what it shows, no matter what the law is, how strict it is, anybody who wants to get a gun and anybody who goes berserk is able to do it. No
matter what you're doing. Well, obviously, sure, criminals aren't going to register anything.
And the thing is this, they were on the track, they're trying to say, ask Shara, what do you tend to do? What the hell can he do? Nothing.
Nothing.
He doesn't know anything. He has no.
This is what I meant when I said to Lorne Gunther after we finished with the press conference feed. When I hear a politician saying they're giving an issue over to another minister for reflection, I see waves of bureaucrats, psychological studies, new regulations that really don't do anything.
Yes. And the thing is this, not it doesn't do anything, it what it does, in a sense, it's so-called comforting the majority by saying things, even though, whatever they said, if you study it, if you look at it, or take it apart, there's nothing in it.
Right.
They have no intention of doing anything, but it's just to pass over the thing and make the majority... of people happy, because we want a quick fix. There's no such thing as a quick fix.
And there's no such thing as a quick fix, and I know that you come from the same European experience as I do, and there's just some things that you've got to get through in a society and be brave and be strong.
By the way, one day I was speaking to you, you got very angry at me, and
I get angry?
Yes.
I've heard that. People have said that about me.
No, but there's one thing.
But Andy, in all seriousness, I mean, people have told me that I get angry. I don't see it in myself.
No, but even though, but then what it is, let me just explain that. I sometimes make statements that is really outrageous in a sense. But if I have the time to prove it, or if I have the time to continue, which you didn't let me at that time, you would... Let me put it this way. I'm more,
out there?
I'm such an extreme person in a sense that all your belief and my belief on certain topics are not verified very far apart.
Oh, I know that.
And the thing is this, when we talked about the yellow star.
Right.
Now, thing is this, what I was trying to say.
Andy, I hate to cut you off, but we really want to stick to to the issue today.
Okay.
Okay, I appreciate your comments. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break for news, and we're going to come back with Jennifer.